hello, and welcome to a live edition of the Dunker Spot. We are underneath the Basketball News Podcast Network umbrella. I am your host, Nikias Duncan. Joining me, as always, is Steve Jones Jr. How are you, sir?
I'm great. Happy to be here.
And we have a special guest. We have the man, the myth, the legend. We have Mark Jones in the house. How are you, sir?
Hey, man. I'm excited to be with you guys, man. Chopping up some buckets and... It's good, man. It's going to be fun. I'm looking forward to this. I've been big fans of both you guys, man. So this should be a good time.
I appreciate it, man. I've been watching you, listening to you for a while. It is surreal to have you here. Not going to fanboy too much, but I'm just glad to have you on the pod.
No, it's good, man.
All right, we got to start you out early with the most important question. How do you come up with these one-liners?
You know what? Honestly, man, it's like I just really am a huge NBA and basketball fan. Like the stuff that I say on air, like you know, it's the same stuff I say when I'm watching a game on my couch at the crib with my wife Sarah. I'll be like, "Oh, fish grease," or you know, I'll see Kyrie start doing his thing, and I'll be like, "Oh, workout! I heard somebody say workout." You know, black people talk to the TV and movies and basketball games. So I just verbalize that and put it out there on the air during games. And it's just having fun during the broadcast. Because my feeling is, if you're not having fun calling NBA basketball games, you're not doing the job correctly. That's kind of the way I approach it. So, you know, it's not really anything that I think about going into a game. Some of the stuff. It just comes, man. I'm just a basketball fan. Like I'm at the park, you know what I mean? Sitting down watching guys run up and down on the sidelines, yelling at people. It's the stuff I throw out there at the park or at home on the couch. It's the same stuff I use in games.
What's your favorite call that you've made so far? Any particular play stand out for you?
Man, through the years, that's a tough one, man.
There's got to be one. There's got to be one that jumps out.
You know what? The fish grease one was something that happened when Steph went off for 54 in New York City, his then career high, before he worked for 62 earlier this year. And I was doing that game with Doris Burke. And during a commercial, when he was at like 49 – during a commercial, I took my headset off and said to Doris, I said, this guy reminds me of my dad. I said, you can't cook with cold grease. So then during the game, when he got up to 54, I'm like, this guy's hotter than fish grease. And that was probably one of my most memorable ones. I think DeMar DeRozan had a play against Detroit when he was still with the Raptors a couple years ago. And Detroit had gone ahead with about 4 seconds to go. And DeMar got the inbound pass. And he weaved through traffic, behind the back, through the legs, went in, dunked it with 1 second to go. And it was an and one. And I lost my mind. That went like, DeMar, dynamite, dominant, devastating. I'm like, I actually stand up. I actually do this. I'm like, I just... If you could get hurt if you're doing a game beside me sometimes, you know, I gotta tell Hubie, hey, sorry, Hubie, or Doris, hey, sorry about that. You know, those are two that kind of stick out. And then this year, Buddy Hield had that tip in for Sacramento in the game in Denver, and he started sprinting off the court, and I was like, run, buddy, run. You know, so those are kind of three that you know that I can just think of off the top of my head. There have been some awesome moments, you know, when Cleveland beat Toronto in the, I want to say the 2016 Eastern Conference Finals, and LeBron crossed over, went to the left wing and threw up a floater over Ananobi, and he banked it in Cleveland. The crowd went nuts. I was like, Cleveland, this is for you. I just love the game, guys. What am I going to say? You know what I mean? You know.
Oh, we got one fan comment here bringing up the bam block on Jason Tatum. Where does that rank for you?
Oh, bam on Jason Tatum. That's right, in the bubble. Okay, now, longtime resident of Dade County, Miami, Florida. That's my disclaimer. That's got to be a top five because, you know, JT went in there and get it out of here. That was be one of the top five as well. That was a great moment because that was, I mean, that was a conference finals game too. So the fact that when I saw Tatum get down the crease of the defense, I'm like, oh, darn, he's going to score. And Bam came over and just jacked it. And that was another lose your mind moment. So that was a good one too. Yeah.
So you mentioned the Buddy Hield game earlier. You are doing broadcasting for ESPN and also Sacramento. How did that arrangement come to be?
You know what, guys? When the Sacramento Kings job became available, it was intriguing to me because I've always thought about, you know, what it would be like to be a local play-by-play announcer. And I remember when Stephon Clark, another one of our African-American brothers, unarmed, shot in his backyard right here in Sacramento. I remember that night, Vivek Ranadive, the owner of the Sacramento Kings, stepping to the microphone at midcourt when, you know, there were a group of protesters outside Golden One Center. I was watching it back at our home in Miami. And I remember Vivek taking the microphone and just pouring his heart out, talking about his love for the community and wanting the Sacramento Kings to be an example and to lead on racial equality and racial justice and the inequalities in our society. And listen, guys, this dude spoke from his heart, okay? An owner of an NBA basketball team. There was no tiptoeing around things and being on the fence. He was like, hey, what's happening here is wrong. In stark contrast to what we see with some other ownership people in other sports, not the NBA. And he spoke just so organically and spontaneously, I thought, man, that's an organization that is ambitioning doing right from wrong. They want the right thing to happen. So I thought, man, in the back of my mind, you know, that was 2018. In the back of my mind, I was thinking, wow, if I ever got a chance to, you know, hang out with them or work with them, I'd take a look. So lo and behold, the job became available. We heard from them. My agent and I heard from them. And we started talking about logistics, how it would work with ESPN and my schedule with them. And we were able to come to a great agreement. And it gets busy. I'm not going to lie to you. I don't know what it's really going to look like until next year, because right now we're doing games. I do my ESPN games from my home studio over here, some of them. And then the rest of them I do in person. I would say I've probably done about 6 or 7 games in the actual arena this year for ESPN, but the most of them I've done from the home studio. And then for Sacramento Kings games, my wife and I are about 1.5 miles from Golden One Center. So I just drive up there and call the games. And for the Sacramento Kings road games, Doug Christie and I also call them from Golden One Center on the studio set there. So all in all, it's busy. I mean, it's busy. I hump it pretty good, man. It's probably a total of 85 games total, you know, between the two. Maybe a little bit more, maybe a little less. But I've had a blast. Nobody loves the NBA more than I do in terms of play-by-play guys. And I got a league pass. I watch all the games, you know, follow it on social with you guys. And it's been fun this year. It's been a busy, different year. Been a different year doing the ESPN work, doing the Sacramento Kings work. It's been one of the interesting things in juggling it, Nikias and Steve, is being able to reach more NBA fans. Sacramento Kings fans have been fantastic to me and my family, man. They're passionate. I mean, through the lean years, they still stick with their people, man. They've been 10 toes down. you know, I would hope that at some point, you know, the team would get into the playoffs and do well by them. And I think, you know, with their backcourt, it's coming sooner rather than later.
I did have one question. What's been, like, the biggest shift as far as moving from doing what you're doing nationally but also covering the Kings game by game? What's been the biggest change for you there?
Yeah, you know what? That's a great question. I think my preparation, the biggest shift is because I'm doing Sacramento, I see all the teams that come through and play the Kings, and I see all the teams that the Kings play on the road. So that really gives me an even broader view of the NBA. Sometimes on network TV, you guys know, with ESPN and ABC, it's a lot of Lakers, it's a lot of Celtics, it's a lot of Clippers, it's a lot of Warriors, it's a lot of the kind of the sexy prime market teams. And sometimes you don't see a lot of the, you know, the Sacramentos, you don't see a lot of the Memphis, you don't see, you know, some of those teams. So I think that's been a nice shift, Steve. And I get to see even more teams in person as opposed to just watching them on League Pass, which I would normally do if I was just doing the ESPN package. And it's made preparation for my games easy, man. And it's given me even more contacts and more kind of different views of the league, which has been fun, man. After doing this for so long, to have a different perspective on things has been a nice eye opener, man. You know?
No, I can imagine being able to paint that picture makes it different. I was interested to bring it to the audience. I don't think they understand how much game prep goes into it from that side of it. Is there anything you could shine on for the audience as far as what goes into preparing to broadcast, not just locally, but nationally? You got to paint a different kind of picture.
Yeah. When I do an ESPN game, my prep is, you know, it's both teams. It's the relevant stories. It's the players, you know, the guys that you expect to get into the ball game, 1 through 9, 1 through 10, whatever, you know, not just, you know, stats, rebounds, points, steals, but their personal stories too, topical issues, you know, whether it's pending free agency, whether it's, you know, a guy on a hot streak and what he's done to get to that point. Maybe Steph is now. I got a Houston Golden State coming up pretty soon. It's being able to see like a real broad picture of things. And that is a lot different, I find, from doing a Sacramento Kings game where my audience, they already know that Buddy Hield has made more three-pointers than anyone else in the NBA outside of Steph. They already know some of those things. So my insights and comments about those players are not quite as broad-based. They're a little bit more specific because they followed their team 1 through 82, 1 through 72 this year, if that makes any sense. You see what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Yes. You know, if you get a national audience for, you know, Boston and Brooklyn, which I have coming up on Friday on ESPN, you know, outside of Brooklyn and Boston fans and real, real hardcores, you know, the casual viewer may not know that James Harden suffered another setback and that's going to put him another 10 days out, or that, you know, Blake Griffin is now making his fifth start. I wouldn't have to say that to Brooklyn crowd, but I'm going to say that to the national audience, because a guy who hasn't seen Brooklyn in a while is going to say, oh, wow, Blake Griffin starting now? So it's part of that is kind of like knowing your audience. And I kind of flick that switch going back and forth between a national audience with ESPN ABC versus a local audience with the Sacramento Kings. And it makes it fun, you know.
All right, let's stay with the Kings. You have been watching them more closely than just about any other team. I have a pretty broad question for you to kick things off. Why are they so inconsistent?
Right. There are games where they play really beautiful basketball. And then there are games where they play like they've never met each other, especially on defense, you know. It's a weird, puzzling thing, man. And they for the most part this year, they played hard. I mean, here we are with, you know, 14 games to go, whatever, and they're playing hard for Luke Walton. They have not let go of the rope. I think sometimes they just have really missed on rotations and communications defensively. You know, offensively, they're ninth or eighth in points per game and offensive rating. They're a good offensive team, but that's not the problem. The problem is giving up, you know, about 117 points per game or 118 points a game. And I like the moves that Monty McNair made, the general manager, at the trade deadline, and Terrence Davis and DeLon Wright and, you know, guys to shore up the bench. But that is the big question this year, the inconsistency. And I think every time that this team has had an opportunity to get in, you know, 3-4 days of solid practice, whenever the schedule has allowed them to, they come out and played a good stretch of basketball. I think if you had to characterize their struggles this year, Stephen Nikias, I think it comes down to they've had a hard time handling success. You know, they've had 5-game winning streaks. They've had a streak where they've won 7 out of 8, and then boom, a 9-game losing streak. And then boom, another 9-game losing streak. And you're like, where did this come from? They'll string. And then like the other day, they go into Dallas and they drag the Mavericks, right? They beat Dallas in Dallas. And it's a real perplexing thing. Like sometimes Doug Christie and I look at each other in commercials like, what's going on? You know, and other times they can look brilliant on the basketball court, but that's why I don't bet, guys. I'll bet. That's why I don't bet. Maybe some guy named Vinny would be looking for me to pay the mortgage, man. I'd lose all the money. You know what I mean? That's why I don't bet.
I agree with you. Like, the offense has been good. I've just been perplexed by the defense all year long. Like, Steve and I have talked about it on the podcast. It felt like them being a switching defense is one thing, but the way that it became kind of an automatic for them, and it would just lead to some pretty egregious mismatches, and offense was basically just have a field day creating things. Then they'd have a stretch of good play where they play a little bit more drop. You get Rashawn Holmes a little closer to the basket instead of guarding point guards all the time. And it's still bad, but it's not as bad. Like, where do you think they should go scheme wise defensively?
Man, it's funny because they've pressed a bunch of different buttons defensively. You know, Rex Kalamian runs their defense, and, you know, a noted, you know, pretty good defensive coach, man. I mean, was with Dwayne Casey in Toronto, and they had a reputation for being one of the better defensive teams, and was with the Clippers after that, and this year was Sacramento. But it's interesting. I remember earlier in the year, guys, seeing them a lot more kind of zone, half court, three-quarter court looks. And then that wasn't quite working out. And I got the feeling that they tried to simplify things a little bit more. And then there have been times, like you just said, where the switching hasn't quite worked out the way that they expected it to. And I think, you know, Rashawn Holmes has done a nice job defensively this year. He's had multiple games where he's blocked 6 or more shots. You know, I think at times, you know, Harrison Barnes, I think, is a solid defender. De'Aaron Fox, they expect so much of him at both ends of the floor. But for the most part, I see him giving a lot of effort at the defensive end. From a scheme standpoint, you know, everybody's switching these days, right? A lot of teams are switching. And I just don't know that it's made for everybody, you know? I don't know that it's made for everybody. And I'm not sure, frankly, where they're to go in terms of how much of it they do. You know, when Whiteside's in there, it's not much of an option. but Holmes is pretty good, 1 through 4. You know, Chimezie Metu has done a nice job at times this year as well. But they've got some things to figure out, and I think that's what's happening in these last games. And I think that, you know, Mo Harkless, Terrence Davis are guys that help defensively. DeLon Wright, you know, you look at those three guys that Monty McNair acquired are pretty good defensive players. So I think over the long haul, moving forward, they're guys that could possibly help.
Well, it's interesting you mentioned kind of the tennis match the Kings have had this year, where they have really quality wins, where, you know, this isn't like they got lucky and they just made a bunch of shots. They've beaten some quality teams, Clippers, Mavs, you mentioned, but they've had the other side. The one consistent has been De'Aaron Fox.
Right.
What do you think has been the biggest piece of his growth this season?
I would say his ability to take control in the fourth quarter. You know, the guy just turned 23 years old, and he's breathtaking. I mean, I've seen every guard on every team this year, and, you know, we were talking about defense. I'll say his offensive growth in the fourth quarter, there have been times where he has virtually taken games over in the last 6 minutes. And I even think right now to this day, I haven't checked the stats in the last few days, but I think he's still one of the top fourth quarter scorers in the NBA. I would bet on that. He's finding his leadership voice, you know, and that's big with a team that's constituted the way that they are. And he's still a young guy, so I think he's finding his leadership voice. I think another part of his something that I've discovered about De'Aaron this year, watching him from 0 to 72, is he likes to guard people. He likes to guard people. Like, there are certain guards where you'll look at and you're like, hey, I want to stick this guy tonight. And he's got that little streak in him where he will want to try and shut somebody down. You know, I know Luka Doncic had a nice stat line against them the other night, but De'Aaron's a guy that he hears that, oh, so-and-so's good, or this guy's good, or that guy's good. He's got that competitive edge in him, and he's got a little bit of nastiness in him. And that's something, Steve, that I've seen in De'Aaron Fox this year, which has been part of his growth. And he's only going to get better, man. I mean, the numbers he's got this year, you know, 24 and 7 plus, with what they've had to go through, I think are pretty impressive numbers. And I don't know what his defensive metrics are, because I just go by the eye test on that end of the floor. I think he's a way better than average. Like, I would say he's a very good defender. I've seen him this year push other guys off of certain hot scores and say, I got him. And for me, that's a big defining point in being a league player in this year, in that you can go at the other guy's best player and say, I want to try and shut him down.
Where do you think
his three-point shooting's improved too? His three-point shooting's improved too, to the point where, you know, 33%, and he's enough of a threat where no one's going underneath screens anymore on him. So that's setting up another whole thing. He gets into the paint a lot. Yeah.
No, that jump shot has been huge, and he's won a lot of games for Sacramento with that jump shot, not just the pull-up three, but the mid-range. He's got a lot of control in this game, so it's been great to see him make that leap. And I think the wins and losses may not be where Sacramento wants it, but his taking that next step has been what you would want if you're the Kings.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, hey, listen, him and Halliburton together in the backcourt, man, they are a backcourt that for the next, you know, 5 years is going to be one of the better backcourts in the NBA. I mean, Halliburton's only going to get better. He's a rookie, and I'm sure we'll talk about him at some point. You know, those two guys have a nice dynamic, and I see the unselfishness between those two. You know, like how early in their respective careers, when C.J. McCollum came to Portland, you saw this between he and Dame. I see the same kind of synergy between these two guys, and I think Halliburton's going to be a star too. And that bodes well for those two guys and for the franchise moving forward.
We can go Halliburton right now, actually. I'd love the fit. I was surprised first and foremost.
Okay.
I was surprised first and foremost that Halliburton even slid to Sacramento. There were quite a few teams ahead of Sacramento in the draft that I felt like he would have helped grease the wheels on both ends of the floor. But he falls to Sacramento, and I love the fit because, as you mentioned, him and De'Aaron Fox have this great synergy. And, like, the one knock that Halliburton had coming out was he wasn't a guy that you kind of clear it out and let him get to the rim or, you know, attack it right. That way. He's a guy
– right.
He maximizes advantages created for him. When you put him alongside a guy like De'Aaron Fox who can get to the rim whenever he wants to, Tyrese Halliburton gets to play against advantages just – I mean, basically whenever he wants to. And I think that's been a great fit for him. Hmm. What has impressed you the most about his game this season?
Court presence and his ability to make his teammates better. I mean, I remember, you know, you talk about him being picked 12th in the draft and him sliding to 12, which is what he did. I can remember before the draft speaking to a few evaluators and scouts. And the common denominator was that, A, this kid is 168 pounds, so they were a little bit wary about that. But B, the other thing that I heard consistently was nobody in this year's draft class will make their teammates better than this guy. And I thought, oh, really? I said, LaMelo Ball? Like, no. This guy is more efficient. He doesn't throw the ball around the yard quite as much. And I know LaMelo early struggled with his turnovers, and they've come down since. But Tyrese Halliburton has a real special elite quality of making everyone better. He's – guys, this year in several games, they've run stuff at the end of shot clock or at the end of a quarter, and he's either gotten a wide-open look for somebody or he's scored the basket himself. It's been something of a revelation. Like, you know now at the end of a quarter, if Tyrese Halliburton's on the floor, he's going to be running a play to either score it himself or get someone else an open look. And I think that's been one of the strong points of his game. Defensively, let me stay on the offensive side. You see his jump shot, right? A lot of people thought it wouldn't translate. Catching 42% on three-pointers on a pretty good volume. So that's another thing that, you know, it looks a little bit unconventional. It's not quite, you know, Jamal Wilkes or even Michael Redd used to sling a little bit with his left hand. But as long as you groove it, right, you rep it, and he's certainly repped it out, shooting 42%. Those things on offense, you know, making his teammates better, three-point shooting, decision-making. And defensively, he's got a little bit of a ways to go still, but he works hard on defense. You know, he tries on defense. He's a scouting report defense guy. He'll look over the opponent that night and take notes and watch a lot of video on who he's guarding that night. And he's not going to help off of shooters that don't need helping off. He's going to make the right plays that way. So, you know, I think he's the rookie of the year. And sure, people are going to call me homer, but I think he's the rookie of the year. They don't have as many wins as Charlotte does, which might tilt at LaMelo Ball's way a little bit. But when you look at his efficiency, his field goal percentage, right around 47, 48, three-point shooting, assists, steals, and the plays and how important he is to his team, being able to go back between being a starter and coming off the bench at different times this year, not complaining about it, total team guy. And here's the it factor I feel about Tyrese Halliburton. He plays the game with a certain type of joy. When you watch this dude play, he's always smiling. You know, he's one of those Kemba Walker guys. He's like always smiling. He's happy for his teammates. This guy is one of those players, when he comes in the locker room, it lights up, you know, and it translates to the court. He never has a bad day. And that's one of the reasons, another one of the reasons why I think he's real unique and special. And, you know, as of now, if you ask me to cast my vote, I'd say he's got the Rookie of the Year award.
That's really interesting, and I like to hear that. The one thing I think is his journey this season has been very interesting. he came in and he was consistent, kind of shot the league a little bit as far as what he was doing. Yeah, the injuries hurt him a little bit, came back. He switched roles, right, like you said. How impressed have you been with that poise and composure to go through that kind of not necessarily linear path, but to consistently produce for your team night in and night out?
Yeah, he's been tasked with a lot of responsibility, Steve, and a lot of change, like you said. And the injury that he had really took him out of his rhythm a little bit. And I don't think he would tell you this or admit this, but I think right around that time, he might have been hitting a little bit of the rookie wall. Nobody likes to admit to that because they're competitive and he's competitive, but that might have been a little bit of a factor. But his ability to be impactful as a starter and what it does for Sacramento as a team is he plays with the ball, and that allows De'Aaron Fox now to play off ball. So De'Aaron has become more lethal offensively because he's getting the ball in the catch, and now he's got dribble shoot pass, right, as opposed to coming up off the bounce all the time. So that's given the offense another dimension when Tyrese is in there. Then when he's coming off the bench, he runs that second unit, and it's been good for him because he's still getting used to his new teammates and Terrence Davis and Mo Harkless, who's now moved into the starting lineup, and DeLon Wright. So it's kind of rounded out his game a little bit, and he's not a kid that complains. I love the fact that he's like De'Aaron in a lot of ways, and that he gets pissed off when they lose, guys. Like he's salty after games, you know. He's not one of these guys after game and, go dap up and, hey, what's up? Hey, man, we just lost by 25. Hey, it's all good, you know. No, he's salty. He's pissed. Like, he walks off the floor and like, hey, I'll hit you up the hip later, you know. I like that about him. And, and I got to know his dad, John Halliburton, a little bit over the last few months. And, his family is just terrific. His dad, John, is a high school coach and a high school referee back in Oshkosh, Wisconsin. And he and Tyrese have a great relationship. And, he hits up Tyrese and, like dad always got some nice insights. And you can tell that he's driven. And it's a nice thing to see off the basketball court, you know.
All right, one more Kings question before we move. I think it's fair to say that Fox and Halliburton will be the backcourt of the future. Where do you see Buddy Hield fitting in with this team long term?
Wow, great question, man. Buddy's got some years on his deal still. And at one point this year, he was leading the NBA in threes made. I think he's in second now next to Steph because Steph's on that superhuman run. But, Buddy, he's kind of a polarizing guy at times, should he be coming off the bench? It's a legitimate point. Should he be starting? He's been starting. Buddy, I think, does best when he's a catch and shoot three guy. And, he's shooting around 30% on his threes this year, which is, you guys know, it's well above the league average. I don't know what they're thinking moving forward with Buddy. Luke had him coming off the bench last year, but he started him this year. I don't know if maybe defensively that's one of the buttons that they might press in the future is trying to bring him off the bench. They've got Mo Harkless in the starting lineup now. But, Buddy can shoot it. He can shoot it. And I think if there's a criticism of him, I think there are people out there that say he's going to shoot threes, run them offline, and don't worry about his playmaking. But I hear you know, Doug and I talk about during games, Buddy being able to be in a position to freelance a little bit more, where if teams are guarding him by top blocking, then, you know, he push up and then flare out to the wing, and just play basketball as opposed to running plays. You understand what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if they're there yet. I don't know if that's something that they want to do with him. But you know, anytime you have an elite shooter on your roster, the dilemma is how to use him and where you use him. So, you know, it's one of the big questions, I think, facing them moving forward. What to do with Buddy? You know, did I throw him enough flowers?
You did. Flowers are blooming.
Shoot it. Buddy can shoot it. I don't know that you want him handling it a whole bunch down the stretch. That's all. You know, you want the ball in De'Aaron's hands.
Well, no, it's interesting. He has the skill set to be able to use him in different ways, but with the roster construction and kind of Fox's growth, it's tough to kind of unlock all of that. So it's interesting to see how he'll shift to adjust to that, because we've seen him produce off the bench when he's able to be more free. We've seen him produce in the starting lineup when he has it going. But, you know, it's kind of finding that base to where he can be more Buddy Hield, you know, less Buddy Hield and more Buddy Yield. You know, watch out. Get out the way.
Right. Yeah. See, the thing is, like, since acquiring Terrence Davis, I like that.
Hey!
Run that hey!
No, you didn't. Come on.
Buddy Hield, let's go.
You got to run that back for me. So I think since they got Terrence Davis, and that's kind of like a Buddy type on the second unit now, because Terrence is a, you know, a catch and shoot guy. So I don't know if that's redundant now if you have both he and Buddy coming off the bench. I don't know how that works.
You know what I'm saying, Steve?
Oh, yeah. It'd be tough. You need one of them to let the other roam. So I totally feel that. But it'll be interesting to see.
Right.
Yeah. Let's move into some.
That's why Luke Walton gets paid to coach at night.
I know, right?
Oh, man. Let's move into some Miami Heat talk, a team near and dear to your heart. Where are you at on Miami's offense right now?
Right.
Because I can't. You know I can't.
Right. You know, you know what that is, right?
305.
Yeah.
Where are you at on their offense? Because I can't make sense of it.
Man, I think two things have happened to Miami's offense. I think Duncan Robinson, you know, he's at the top of the scouting report. And all those dribble handoffs that he used to sprint into and get it off quickly, that's not happening. I think we saw that starting to happen last year in the finals because the Lakers just smothered him and made it tough, right? You guys saw that in the finals. And I think that has become the blueprint for guarding him. I think Spo, when I did their game this weekend, has talked about him being able to, Nikias, you and I talked about running pick and rolls with him, you know, more ball screen stuff. Just one, two dribbles and elevate and come off, because he's not the type of guy you want playing with it too much. Mm-hmm. But I think that's probably a reason why they've fallen 25th in offense. I think it's Duncan Robinson. I think it's, you know, Jimmy missing 12 games with COVID and, you know, losing 18 pounds. And I think it's Tyler Hero. You know, he's another guy where, you know, players have kind of figured him out a little bit, and now it's Heat's offense is going to trend up like it was last year in the bubble. Hero has to figure out counters and what those counters are for him, because I see defenses sitting on some of his stuff. And in fairness to him, you know, he's played a little bit of point guard this year like he did earlier in the year, and he's coming off the bench now. And there have been a bunch of different roles, even though Miami is very positionless. I think he's struggled with the team's general lack of continuity and how he's been into it and him being able to evolve as an offensive player. I think I look at those two guys, and that's probably where the drop-off has come, because it's not Jimmy. He's, you know, averaging a career high in, you know, rebounds, steals, and he's doing what he does offensively, and assists. He's almost eight assists a game this year. But I just think Spo's figuring out how to make those two guys better, and Bam is still, you know, fantastic. I don't have any problems with what he's done offensively this year. I know Jimmy this weekend talked about him being a little bit more of a bully and taking it to the basket, but I think Bam's fine where he is offensively.
I mean, that's interesting. You speak about Bam. What do you think about the leap he's taken offensively as far as taking more ownership, being able to score more buckets on his own, post up, face up, pull up, and be able to create not just – I mean, it's a balance because he's the engine of that offense as far as the triple handoffs and what they like to run. But he's also scoring more. Yeah. So what do you think about that dynamic and how he's grown in that part of his game?
Here's my big prediction for Bam Adebayo, Steve and Nikias. I think in 2 years, we're going to be talking about Bam as an MVP candidate, much like Jokic right now. I really do. When you look at his ability to score, rebound, assist, you know, he's 20, 10, 5 easily. And then on top of that, Bam actually guards people. He's not like, hey, listen, I know there's a lot of Jokic fans out there, and I'm a big fan of his too. The reason why I don't have him as my MVP leader right now is because there's still too many games where Michael Malone takes him out of the game for defensive purposes. You can't be my MVP if you're not on the floor for defense at the end of games. That's a non-qualifier for me, you know, because I like my stars two-way stars. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
LeBron, Kobe, you know, you go down the list. Jimmy Butler's a two-way star, you know. You got to be able to guard people. I think Bam does that. I think in 2 years, we're going to be talking about Bam Adebayo as an MVP candidate because he still hasn't even come close to his ceiling. I mean, I think the next step for him is making three-pointers. We've seen his mid-range jumper. His middie is tight, right?
Mm-hmm.
Miami has great player development, probably amongst the elite player development programs in the league. So he'll be shooting three-pointers by next year easily. Now, if he isn't already, he just probably doesn't have the freedom to do it, isn't comfortable enough doing it. But, hey, listen, I've seen Bam Adebayo play in the Miami Pro League in the summertime. He's jacking threes.
he's got it in his bag. That's what you're saying?
Oh, yeah. I've seen him. Like, he's hitting.
He has it. Yeah.
Yeah, you have to check out some of his. If you can't get down there to watch him, check some of the highlights. Like, he's hitting side steps, step backs. He's legit playing like a guard in those.
Oh, yeah. No. The Miami Pro League, man, they didn't have it last year, but the 2 summers before that, I'm in the gym with those guys. That hot box at Miami High School is 185 degrees in July, and Bam is in there coming down doing all this. I remember I was watching a game with my daughter once. I'm like, Sophia, look at Bam. He don't play like this with Miami. But you could see it coming. Like, it wasn't that far off. You know what I mean? It wasn't a total stretch. It wasn't a reach. So that's the next step. He's going to be an elite player in this league. I mean, like, MVP-type candidate soon because of his versatility. And Riley loves him, man. And that was another great draft choice by the Miami Heat. Really was.
Well, we've talked about Tyler Hero. We talked about Duncan Robinson, some of those guards. The Heat acquired one during the trade deadline. They got Victor Oladipo in there. Only had a limited stretch of games before he got hurt again. What were your early impressions on his stint in Miami?
You know what? Incomplete grade so far. I think Vic potentially is a great fit there. I think Vic is probably a guy that would and is buying into the Miami culture. He's probably Vic is a pleaser, you know. He wants to do well. He's like Jimmy Butler. When Jimmy got to Miami, Pat Riley met him in the parking garage, took him from the parking garage right to the scale in the weight room with Bill Foran right there. And Riley stepped on the scale first, and Riley said, "Oh, I'm at the same weight. Jimmy been there for 5 years." And Jimmy said, Riley looked at him and says, "Your turn." So Jimmy got on the scale. He's like, man, he took out his keys. He took out his wallet. He took out his pockets. He got down to his shorts. He wanted to please. You know, bottom line, he wanted to please. He's a pleaser. And he made weight. But I think Victor is one of those guys, too. I think Vic is a guy that has bought into the Heat culture down there. You know, I think he's always had an eye on Miami. I just don't know about this recent injury. It's really got me guessing now. I saw Vic in Houston. I did a couple of their games. I did his first game, his second game with Houston. And I don't know if it's just me or it just he didn't seem like he had his fluidity back in his movement. I could be wrong, you know. And I root for him because, you know, you guys probably know Vic a little bit. He's a great guy, hard worker in the USA basketball pipeline. I think if he can stay healthy, he's a great, great move for the Heat. I don't know that they're sold on him and his health yet. And I think these last little stretch of games and moving on to the playoffs is going to determine a big part of, you know, Vic's future with Miami and to what extent.
How do you view their playoff prospects right now? They're currently in the play-in. I think they're right at seventh right now. Do you see them getting up to that 5-6 range, or do you think they're going to hang in around that area?
Man, nobody wants to play in healthy Miami. No, they don't want that kind of smoke. They do not want the smoke. I think if Jimmy's healthy, you know, the ankle gets better. I think if they have all their people, I think if Oladipo can get back and get in 5 or 6 good games and get acclimated, get up to speed. Miami has, you guys know, they're a plug-and-play culture organization. So anybody you put in is going to do what they're supposed to do, is going to be clear on what their roles are. They are going to know how to play, when to play, what to run to play. So if they're healthy, if they, as I like to say, Brett Brown once had this saying, it all depends how we land that plane at the end of the regular season. So I think if Miami's plane lands right at the end of the regular season and they're healthy, I think they're as good a bet as anybody to win the East, because I'm not totally sold on Brooklyn right now, especially with their health issues. Brooklyn is, I think, 23rd in defensive efficiency. I mean, they're so blessed with an abundance of riches at the offensive end. I don't know if it really matters. You know what I mean, guys? But I mean, Miami's 7th in defensive efficiency. They can guard people. And Jimmy's going to get – they got a closer, Jimmy Butler. So I don't think that anybody wants to play Miami. I wouldn't count them out of at least making it to the conference finals. So I don't think it really matters where they finish. I think with the lack of real true crowds in buildings, I think that's a factor. So home court won't matter if Miami doesn't finish in the top four. So I think I'd put them right amongst that elite group with Brooklyn, with Philadelphia. I'd even put them ahead of Milwaukee, I think, when you look at playoffs.
No, Miami is going to be tough. I don't know who wants to see them in the playoffs, especially when they have a guy like Trevor Ariza contributing the way he is and what that brings to that team. Too. So. Yep. It's going to be interesting. It's going to be tough. I don't want to see Spo in the Heat. That's my thought.
Yeah. You know, another guy with Miami we haven't talked about, Kendrick Nunn, is back to being the Kendrick Nunn that was first team all rookie last year. People forget about him in the bubble. He was not himself. He had COVID for almost 2 months and never really got back to being who he was. he's playing now and as a starter, Spo has imbued him with a lot of confidence again, man. And he is, you know, he's one of those tough dudes from Chicago. And he's healthy now, and he's going to make a difference for them too. A guy that they didn't have last year in their championship run in the East.
Fair enough. So who would be your current favorite in the East right now?
Today, I would probably take Philadelphia.
Ooh.
If okay. Joel Embiid is not on the shelf, and every mm-hmm. and every, I'm just saying, right? If everyone's healthy there, I would say Philadelphia. They'd have to be my favorite. Brooklyn's got too many moving parts right now with their health, and defensively, I can't trust it. You know, that's just me. Philadelphia number two, I think, in defensive efficiency. For me, Ben Simmons might be the defensive player of the year. And they got other guys who can guard as well. Danny Green, Thibault, you know, playoffs, you guys know, everyone else knows each other's plays. So it's about, you know, guarding people and making shots. And I think Philadelphia has all the elements of that. So I'd have to say they're my favorite in these. What do you guys think?
Steve, you want to go?
I have Brooklyn right now.
You got Brooklyn?
Pending health. So it doesn't look great considering they can't play together. But I still have Brooklyn considering that offense. I know who Nekias has.
Yeah.
I've been banging the Milwaukee drum all year long, and I feel like I'm on an island with it.
Okay.
Like I've been impressed with how good they've been this season despite changing virtually everything they do on both ends of the floor, like changing their offensive alignment, leaning into more switching, playing a little bit more small ball. They've had some injuries with Drew. I mean, Drew's been out with COVID. Giannis has had a recent stretch of missing games.
Right.
They've still been able to kind of churn things along. I think they have more avenues to create solid looks in the half court late in games. And I also have questions about Brooklyn's defense. I have a few questions about Philadelphia in the half court late in games. So I think Milwaukee has enough continuity. They have enough star power. And now that they've actually experimented with some things on both ends, I think they will be more able to adjust and do different things once it calls for in the playoffs. They're better prepared to do that than they were last year.
Yeah.
I'm gonna send some food to Buck Island.
You know what? I don't mean I don't mean to disrespect Milwaukee. And the one reason why I'll hold out a hope for them is because Drew Holiday, man, is the new wild card there, right? I mean, like you said, a guy can go get a bucket at the end of the shot clock is priceless in the playoffs. And that's a different element, you know, that they didn't have, and he's going to guard people too. So we'll see. We'll see. You know, Milwaukee's been interesting. They've been reinventing themselves all year, right, with the defensive switching, and they're no longer a true five-out team. They're doing some different things. So I don't know, man. I like my best player to knock down jumpers, though. You know what I mean?
Ooh. But, hey.
I feel you.
Drew Holiday.
It may not matter.
Drew Holiday has been important. Glue Holiday.
Yeah, I love Drew. Yeah.
We'll get you out of here on this one. We'll move to the West. A lot of teams in flux in the West right now. Lakers injuries. Clippers have kind of reinvented themselves. Injuries with Utah. Who's your favorite in the West right now?
Lakers. Easy. That's an easy one, man. Got to be the Lakers. I mean, healthy AD, healthy LeBron. I'll just say one thing, guys. I don't know if y'all have ever noticed, but every time LeBron goes down to Miami midseason, he comes back really good. I don't know what's going on.
Just needed some sunshine. That's all.
Vitalized.
It's the vitamin D. It's the
you
vitamin
made the trip
D.
with the Lakers down to Miami. Hey, man. Hey, he made the trip with the Lakers. Even though he was hurt, he made the trip down to the South Beach with his teammates, the Lakers. And if he's healthy, man, and he's getting this little midseason break, they went long deep into, you know, October for the finals, and they wore off a lot of tread on their tires, man. Him and AD come back healthy. They got Drummond now. And I think Drummond is a key piece for them because losing McGee and losing Dwight, I think that was a little bit more important than people realize. Those guys were great defensively last year and stretched the floor at the offensive end vertically, right? Everyone talks about stretching the floor with jumpers. Those guys stretched the floor vertically, and that was a big part, I think, of the success. And I think Drummond brings some of that back. And if those guys are healthy, if LeBron and AD are healthy, I just, you know, I don't see anybody beating them. I just don't. I'm not quite sold on Utah. That's a great regular season record. And the Clippers, you know, every game for the Clippers it's like a referendum on their chemistry. You know what I mean? And now Kawhi's out. So that's kind of the way I see the West. Yo, and hey, I got some respect on Chris Paul's name. I'm not going to count them out either. I mean, Phoenix, I might even go with Phoenix number two in the West, right behind Los Angeles.
Ooh, okay.
Yeah, I love what Chris Paul has done for that team, man. I mean, this dude had a stretch of games where he had like 41 assists and no turnovers or whatever the number was. It was sick. And to see what the impact he's had on his teammates, you know, Monty Williams has done one of the great coaching jobs in the NBA this year.
He sure has. Who's your MVP? You said it wasn't the Joker. Who's your MVP?
I would say right now it's probably, you know, I think LeBron has missed too many games right now, but I had him as my MVP before he got hurt. Embiid coming back and playing well, I think Joel Embiid is probably my MVP right now. And, you know, I give him the edge over LeBron because of games played, you know. And, you know, I don't know what the exact numbers are, but being able to finish off a season with a good stretch of games, I think, has an impact. And I love the year that Joker has had, but, you know, I got to see something at the other end, you know. Unless you're so stupid, hot, crazy, historically breaking the record book, you know, 40 points a game in the month of April like Steph Curry is, then that's a disclaimer. You know what I mean? If you're Steph Curry hot, then I throw the defensive thing out.
That was going to be my last backup question. Can Steph steal it? Can Steph steal it if he keeps doing this?
Ride in. Yeah, definitely. Definitely, because I don't think he was on the ticket, but he is now. He got to be on the ticket now. I mean, what he's done in April with his three-point shooting and the streak that he's on, actually going back into March, carrying that team, you know, has been historical, literally historical. You know, when you're on those ESPN graphics beside Will Chamberlain, you know you're doing real well, you know? Yeah.
Go ahead, guys. My bad.
I was just gonna say, at what point are they gonna stop putting Wilt on the graphics? You can't.
He should have his own record book. It's just not fair. I know. He should have his own record book. Yeah, because it's always and it's funny. It's crazy because I have to read these stats and I have to read these graphics off, and it's always so and so since Wilt Chamberlain. So and so since Wilt Chamberlain. You know. So I've always said, I joked about, we should have like a Wilt Chamberlain record book and then an NBA record book, you know. Just a thought.
Yeah, he just warped so much. Well, Mark, thank you so much for giving us so much of your time. When can the people hear you again?
What's that? I'm sorry?
I said, when can the people hear you? What's your next few podcasts coming up?
Oh, next game coming up is going to be Friday night. Brooklyn against Boston on ESPN. And then Saturday afternoon, a quick turnaround for me, it's going to be the Knicks and Raptors on ESPN at 1:00 Eastern time. So I'm going back to back Friday and Saturday. And I'm excited about those games, man. And in particular, we'll have to do this. I hope you guys have me back sometime soon so we can talk about the Knicks, because I love what Tibbs has done. Coach of the year, maybe. Coach of the year, Tibbs. You know, him and Monty.
That's music to Steve's ears right here.
I've been trying to tell I've been trying to tell this man this for at least 3 months, and he won't listen to me. It's fine, though. It's fine. And you're always welcome. So we will definitely dive into the Knicks, and you will have to hear us, Nikias.
Yeah. I might have to use a sick day.
We'll no, I'm... No, for sure, man. For sure. We'll do a playoff preview show or something. You guys, I'd love to come back and do it again with you guys.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, that is Mark Jones. You can find him at Mark Jones ESPN, or you can just simply watch him on ESPN. You can find me on Twitter at Nikias NBA, Steve Jones Jr. at Steve Jones 20, and we will catch y'all later.